Northern From Adam podcast. We are joined by the New England Patriots wide receiver Julian Edelman, who will update us on his rehab and how he has spent his time away from the game this year. But first, another version of Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam. We should ask Adam.
Always love asking you some of these good questions, Adam. What do you say we do it again?
Well, thanks very much, Josh. We got my producer, Josh Macri, here who gathers together some of these questions that you all solicit on Twitter, which we thank you for in advance. And yes, Josh, I say we get to the questions before we get to Julian Edelman.
Let's do that. There are about 25 people who asked some version of this question, Adam, but Chad Allenduff is the person who gets his name read on this world-renowned podcast. He asked, along with so many other people, is there any chance that the Bears will fire John Fox before the end of the season?
I think there's a sentiment around the league that a lot of people believe that John Fox's job is in jeopardy. That's not a breaking headline. I think people know that. I think when you don't win on a consistent basis, I think there's the chance for change. I think when people talk about potential openings this year, they list Chicago amongst them. Now, we'll see what the McCaskey family decides to do, but yes, I think the Bears are one of those teams that everybody is watching, and I think for all those people who have called in, ultimately, I think there's a real chance that that's going to happen.
Next question from Roman Reyes, at Roman Ray 13. Shefty, could you make the case that DeAndre Hopkins is the best receiver in the NFL?
Well, I wouldn't do that. DeAndre Hopkins is amongst the best receivers in the NFL, but when I watch Antonio Brown play, and I watch Julio Jones play, and I watch lately Keenan Allen play, and I watch some of these other players out there at this point in time, DeAndre Hopkins might be the most acrobatic player who can high point a ball and come down with certain passes. His style is very, very unique, and I would put him amongst the best players in the game, Josh. But to say that he is the best wide receiver in the game, over Antonio Brown, over Julio Jones, I'd have a hard time doing that. Even Larry Fitzgerald, a guy like that who's been doing it for a long period of time.
So if you had to pick one, who are you picking?
If I had to pick one, I'd pick Antonio Brown.
Okay, fair enough. 8-4 Seahawks at MajorSpy98 tweets at us using the hashtag AskAdam and says, how much do you think somebody like Eli Manning would cost a team in free agency if the Giants were to cut him loose?
Well, it's a good question. If they're going to cut him loose, basically, let's keep in mind here, he's got a no-trade clause in his contract, so he would have to approve or sign off on any place he's traded. He also has a $5 million roster bonus due on the fifth day of the league year. So if he doesn't want to play for New York and they want to make a move, basically, he would get to dictate where he goes. Now, if he were on the open market, he would command, I'm sure he'd ask for quite a bit of money, $18, $19, $20 million a year. Now, what he would get, I don't know. In the end, it would be a function of how many teams would be out there willing to pay him. But he's always done very well contractually. I don't know that he would do quite as well, but there still would be enough of demand. I would peg the number for Eli Manning on the open market at $19 million a year.
I like that. I like that. Let's keep it in the Big Apple with this question from Anastasia Williams at Anastasia or Anastasia 026. Who are some potential general managers and coaches, they need both, that the Giants will be looking at?
Well, listen, I think when you have Ernie Accorsi helping on the search, you're going to have a slant towards certain people that he's connected to. Now, if you go back and look at the people that he has recommended to other teams in the past, and he has done that. He has recommended other people. Here's the people that he's recommended to other teams when they've consulted with him. Tom Heckert, who's with the Denver Broncos. Chris Mara, who's with the Giants. Gene Smith, who is with the Jaguars. Dave Gettleman, who we work with, who is with the Panthers. John Dorsey with the Chiefs. Mark Ross with the Giants. George Payton and the Vikings. Lake Dawson, now with the Browns, I believe. Brian Gain. Sheldon White, Trent Kirchner, Kevin Abrams, the Giants interim GM. These are names that he's recommended before and that you'd have to figure would be in play now. I think that it's also fair to assume that we're going to hear something about the New England GM, Nick Caserio, who's going to get some play here. And I think those are some of the guys you're looking at. Joey Klingscales is a guy out in Oakland that's done some nice work with that roster, has always been waiting for an opportunity. Terry McDonough interviewed for jobs in Arizona last year. and was a finalist for the 49ers job that ultimately went to John Lynch. And so it's just a question of what Ernie Accorsi, what John Mara, what Steve Tisch, what they want to do with that job. When we talk about the head coaching candidates, I think most people start in New England with Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia in no particular order. Josh, the offensive coordinator, Matt, the defensive coordinator, both interviewed very well. Pat Shurmur's done a great job with the Vikings this year as the offensive coordinator. I think Chris Richard, the Seahawks defensive coordinator, is going to get some looks, as is Terrell Austin, the Lions defensive coordinator. No doubt in my mind about that. Mike Vrabel is a guy that's thought of very highly. If we're going to recycle coach, Jim Schwartz done a great job in Philly. You know, like I mentioned, Pat Shurmur, who's been a head coach before. So there are a lot of candidates, and I've heard that from teams and people that there aren't a lot of great candidates this year. I don't believe that at all. I think there's always great candidates, and I think it's up to the teams to go find them, always.
One thing that whoever is in the front office with the Giants will have to do, likely, is find a new quarterback. And Ken Lim at KenGLim17 wants to know, which quarterbacks in the upcoming draft class look the most legit to you, Adam?
Well, here's what we know. It's early December, and the people who study this for a living say it's one of the deeper quarterback classes that we've seen in a while. And I think that if Sam Darnold comes out, he'll be up there. Josh Rosen is universally held in high regard for his talents. He'll have to answer some other questions. Josh Allen, Wyoming, is still going to be a very high draft pick. Teams love Baker Mayfield. I'm just telling you right now, I've already had a bunch of teams say, man, Baker Mayfield, love that guy, which always tells me when I start hearing from multiple teams that they love a particular quarterback, that he's going to go higher. I used to hear the same thing about Carson Wentz. The September of his final season at North Dakota State, I had a GM call me and say, I got my sleeper quarterback, I'm going to be able to get in the third round, Carson Wentz. And then, of course, it didn't happen that way because there were other teams that called me in October, November. And all of a sudden, everybody knew about Carson Wentz. And eventually, the Philadelphia Eagles traded up to go get him with the second overall pick. So there are these quarterbacks. There are other quarterbacks out there. There's a quarterback in North Carolina State I've begun to hear a lot about. Luke Falk is out there. Mason Rudolph I've heard quite a bit about. And there are supposedly other quarterbacks out there as well, Josh. So it goes deep, and it's going to be bountiful, and there's going to be a chance for plenty of teams with quarterback questions to go find a quarterback.
Well, and Adam, you talked about the guys who study this for a living.
Yeah.
Mel and Todd, they have their own podcast. It's called First Draft. A new episode dropped yesterday, Tuesday. So if the draft is your thing, do yourself a favor. Check that out on your favorite podcasting platform.
And what's their take on quarterbacks right now, Josh?
They say it's incredibly deep, Adam, similar
there
to
you
yourself.
Go.
And they said that Josh Rosen is the most polished, but other guys may have a higher ceiling. Speaking of the draft, this question from Ryan Brothers at Brothers Ryan. Given the Broncos' recent lack of draft success, Adam, what changes do you anticipate them making in the way they scout and draft talent? A lot of guys are saying John Elway might be feeling a little heat under that seat.
You know, it's funny. They won the Super Bowl a couple of years
ago.
John Elway gets an extension, one of the richest extensions for an NFL executive in a long time. And now there are questions and people criticizing because they're having the worst season that they've had in franchise history since 1967. And I covered that team for 15 years, and losing doesn't play well there or anywhere. So I understand it. I think what they may do is they may look to infuse some young personnel people into their front office to try to get another different set of eyes, opinions, perspectives. I think some youth there might do them some good. I think that they'll look at that. I know people wonder about Vance Joseph's future. I don't believe they want to, plan to, intend to let him go. But I also know that there's going to be 4 weeks left in the season, and there are going to be some games that they have in December where their home stadium is going to be lightly filled for games. They're probably going to wind up losing. The fans are going to get increasingly angry. And there still is more time in the season to soil things. So even though the Broncos don't want to do anything and don't plan to do anything, you just never rule these things out because December can be an ugly month for losing teams having the type of seasons that the Broncos have had this year.
Absolutely. We obviously know that the Broncos are not going to win the AFC West, but Kaysen Floyd wants to know, at this point, Adam, who's your money on to win that division?
I think right now Kansas City has the home game against the Chargers, and I know the Chiefs have been slumping and struggling, and they're not doing much of anything right. The defense has suddenly sprung leaks. But the fact of the matter is the Chargers still have to go there. The Raiders are competing, but here's the problem with the Raiders' schedule. Three of the last four games are on the road, and they play teams all vying for the playoffs. So of those three teams, I don't like the Raiders at all. The Chargers are really coming on. They're hotter than the Chiefs. They're playing better football than the Chiefs. But they still have to go win in Arrowhead in December. And if they can do that, then they deserve to win the AFC West.
While we're playing the prediction game, Adam, Joey at Joey M. Avina wants to know, will the Packers make the playoffs, yes or no?
Here's the thing. I think they're good enough to make the playoffs. They may have lost one game too many already. When you look at all the teams that are in front of them and that they're vying with right now, they're going to have to be flawless down the stretch. Now, the good thing for them is that it really is starting to look more and more like Aaron Rodgers will be back next week against Carolina. All that will take is medical clearance from the doctors and them winning Sunday against the Cleveland Browns. If they can win Sunday and he gets medical clearance, I think he plays against Carolina. And if he plays against Carolina, then their chances are increased infinitesimally. But the problem is, even if he plays against Carolina, that's still a tough team.
Yeah,
they're not
no
a cinch to win that
win
game.
Exactly.
And they've got to win out here to make the playoffs in a conference that's just stacked with good teams.
Absolutely. Adam, we know that you're not a coach. You're a journalist. But if you were a football coach, Sam Rubio at RubioSam31 wants to know if you could choose any team to coach in the NFL, which one would it be?
Well, I probably want to coach the Philadelphia Eagles because that means I would get a 23, 24-year-old Carson Wentz and my job will be safe for the next 10, 12 years.
That's a good point.
So if I'm going to pick a team to coach, I know Philadelphia is a tough media market. The fans are impatient. They get angry. I got all that. But I'm going where I can coach a quarterback for the next 12 years because if I got a great young quarterback and Carson Wentz is, then my job is basically safe as long as I do things and handle myself right.
That's true. And let's say you do win a Super Bowl there, you're deified. In Philadelphia.
I would love to be deified in Philadelphia. if that's what it's going to take, Josh, I'm all happy to do that.
There we go. As we previously established, you're a journalist, Adam, and Aaron Tolentino.
I pretend to be one on TV, yes.
That's true, but Aaron says that he's an aspiring sports journalist, and he loves to cover football and basketball, similar to yourself. What would be your tips to give to someone that aspires to be in your position?
Well, I would say this to you, and I would say it to anybody. You know, back in 2014, I believe it was. It might have been 13, but I think it was 14. If you just Google Adam Schefter Northwestern speech, and I've told this to a few people who have asked journalistic questions or about trying to come into this industry and this field. I went and spoke to the Northwestern Graduate School, the Medill School of Journalism, where I got my master's, and gave him about an hour talk. And basically, that's really the best thing to do. I don't want to waste people's time here, but there were a number of tips on there that are still applicable today. Everything I said then, I would say today. And it's true of anybody going into journalism, finance, law, teaching. You come up with the industry. Technology, I think the same principles and attributes apply. Basically, it's hard work. It's treating people right. It's making yourself indispensable. It's doing the right thing. And if you can go back and just Google Adam Schefter Northwestern speech 2014, you can watch the video if you have any desire to see more and hopefully pick up something from that about getting into this industry.
Adam, it wouldn't be an Ask Adam segment if we didn't have at least one question about food that
Good.
Comes to
I
us
love
this
that.
Week.
Josh, I love those questions.
from Jeremy York. Jeremy says, if you could break bread with any 3 to 4 guests, who would you invite and what would you serve?
Well, you know, I had this conversation with somebody this morning. I could have sushi and pizza every night alternate.
It's a weird combination.
Happy.
Oh,
well,
not at
sushi,
the same time. Yeah,
one night sushi, one night pizza, one night sushi, one night pizza, one night sushi, one night pizza, and be set for the rest of my life. Like, I'm all good there. So it just depends on what alternate night it is and what we'd be having for dinner at that point in time. The guest that I would have at my dinner, so it's my farewell dinner. We can invite anybody we want, right?
Yep.
I think I would have my grandfather, Poppy Dave, who passed away in 2001 of lung cancer, 2002. I think I would have John F. Kennedy because of the fascination surrounding him and how much I'd love to learn from him. And I think maybe we'd put at that table, wow, 3 or 4. I get 2 more guests?
Yeah, if only one makes the cut, then only one makes the cut. This is an exclusive dinner.
Yeah. Well, John F. Kennedy would fulfill a lifelong dream. I've never met a current or former United States president.
No
so
kidding.
That's something that I would love to do one day. I've gotten very jealous of all these ESPN reporters who've gotten to go to the White House and, you know, take pictures with Barack Obama or get his NCAA tournament picks. I've never done that, anything like that. So that would be kind of cool. And I guess I'd like somebody to provide some humor at the table. So right. maybe Billy Crystal or Jerry Seinfeld, maybe both of them to fill the last two spots to make me, Poppy Dave, and John F. Kennedy laugh.
There you go. Well, you got dinner. Now, what about the movie? Adam at Adam Wild FF wants to know, what's your favorite romantic comedy of all time?
Boy, best romantic comedy. Josh, let me say this before we go into the romantic comedy.
Yeah.
My favorite movie of all time, the movie that when you put it on TV, you can't break away from it because it's so good, you just can't stop watching. You're like eating ice cream. You take a bite, you got to finish the whole pint. Shawshank Redemption.
That's a great movie.
My favorite movie of all
time. Certainly top five, Adam.
Oh, top one. Top one. But if I'm going to say romantic comedy...
You strike me as a romantic comedy kind of guy, I got to tell you.
You know, I was back in the day, and now that I'm married and the two kids and we're later in life, we never get to go to the movies, and
right.
we just don't do that very much. But is something about Mary a romantic comedy? That's more comedy than romantic, right?
Sure, but it's boy meets girl, boy
that
falls for girl.
That was really funny.
Yeah, we can count that one.
That was more comedy than romantic, and then my romantic comedy would be When Harry Met Sally.
That's a classic.
Which was more romantic than comical, but it was both.
Right.
And I would say that, if we're going to talk the true, sincere, genuine romantic comedy, that would be it.
Well,
that
and you're having Billy Crystal over for this imaginary dinner of yours, so
you guys could cuddle up together
afterwards and watch one of his classics.
Oh, well, yes. We're going to talk about that with Julian Edelman coming up here in just a moment there, Josh.
Absolutely. Well, there's nobody my wife would like to watch a romantic comedy with more than Julian Edelman. But, yeah, she didn't ask that question, so that's the only shout-out she'll get. We'll have to see if Julian gives her a shout-out later on in the podcast, but he's coming up next. And if you want to continue asking these questions to Adam, make sure you do so using the hashtag AskAdam.
Julian.
Chef.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How you doing, buddy?
You know, first of all, I got to tell you, I got to apologize. I missed you in Detroit, and we were so looking forward to talking to you after the game that night. Were you aware of that?
No, I tore my ACL.
I'm aware. I was there. Yeah, you know what happened?
Yeah.
Basically, I arranged with ESPN. I was bringing my daughter. I have a 9-year-old daughter on assignment. She was 8 at the time. And one of the things that she wanted to do most of all was talk to Julian Edelman about the catch in the Super Bowl. And so we went to Detroit, and we put in requests for you, Gronk, Tom, Bill, and we got everybody except Julian Edelman, and we felt bad.
Oh, I apologize.
No, you've got nothing to apologize for. We were there, and you went down, and I felt bad for you. I felt bad for the team. Felt bad for everybody. It's a rough deal.
Yeah, it was a crappy situation, but whatever.
Yeah, well, was it the surface or what was the deal then? I mean, do you think that had anything to do with it?
It's a sticky surface, but. You know, I was trying to run 15 yards at a full steam ahead and stop and go at once, you know, another area. People want to say I make that cut all the time, but I don't make it with that kind of velocity.
Yeah.
I think it was kind of like I disrespected the game a little.
Wow. Wow. Do you wonder about that now?
Nah, you know, I'm over it thinking about that, Adam. You know, you go through a solve stage, and you go through a sulking stage. And you go through a stage where, what could I have done this, that? I've truly gotten past that, and now I'm more focused on just, you know, progression and getting this thing better and putting all my time and energy and trying to make this thing heal as fast as it possibly can and as best it possibly can.
Where are you in the recovery process, Julian?
I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. You know how it is around where I play.
Okay. Well, I don't want to get you in trouble here when you're rehabbing.
No worries. But, you know, we got a lot of movement stuff going. You know, you start to load it and you start to play with it. And the main thing is you got to listen to your body.
Yeah.
Because you push it, you beat it up, you got to get it acclimated to doing certain things. But then, you know, you got to have your rest, your recovery time, and that's a huge, crucial part of it. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I'm the type of guy that tries to float around that line a little too closely.
Well, let me ask you this question. I'm going to sign off on you giving this answer in advance, if you don't mind. Should the team make it into the postseason? Is there any hope that you could be brought off IR at any point? Any hope?
You know, probably not.
Probably not.
You know, I don't even want to get it out there.
Yeah.
You know, you really can't put a timetable on these types of things because A, people heal differently, speeds differently. B, you know, you put a time out there, a day, and if you don't get it past that day, then some, you know, like, oh, well, whose fault is it? Is it the athlete's fault? Is it the training staff's fault? Is it the doctor's fault? And then, you know, C, you know, you get early and you come back and you get hurt, then oh, well, maybe he shouldn't have been going. You know, there's just so many things that there's too many variables to put a number on, especially when it comes to, you know, everyone's different. Everyone's different. You know, I mean, Adrian Peterson's an absolute superstar, like Wolverine type man. You know, I don't know if I'm like Adrian Peterson, you know, and there's other guys that take longer cases. So, you know, I'm just going to focus on trying to get my my knee better, and I'm going to work relentlessly, if you catch that, Adam.
Title the book, Julian. Title the book. For all those people out there, Julian's got a new book called Relentless. Very good. Christmas is coming up.
Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa.
All that. Yeah, exactly. And people who like to read, that would be an excellent addition. And if I'm not wrong, Julian, it does come with a poster of Julian Edelman, correct?
There is a poster.
See that?
There is a fun poster.
What could be better than a poster and a book for Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, or whatever holiday you're celebrating?
Exactly.
What is your daily routine like now in terms of the rehab?
My daily routine is, you know, I wake up and I go to work and I see the fellas. And then, you know, it's kind of like class, except, you know, when they go to class, I go to rehab. And then, you know, I'll float around the hallways and poke my head into a class here and there, just to kind of see what's going on. But, you know, I'm at the facility from, you know, 7 to 3 o'clock working on my knee. Then I go up to TB12 Center.
Yep.
And I get that work in with Alex Guerrero, my guy James up there, to kind of keep all my muscles pliable and you know, kind of try to put a stamp on letting all my muscles go dormant. And you know what I mean? Because it's a lot of problems of when you get these things, you go in and you repair what you got hurt, but then you lack the focus on the other intrinsic muscles. Mm-hmm. And I go there and they help me work with those types of things. I work with the Patriots staff as well. They're doing an awesome job. So, you know, it's just, then I go home and I put on my Normatex or my game ready. And I sit and I handle phone calls. I got my little girl now. So, you know, I've been hanging out with her.
That's a blessing right there, right? That's a beautiful thing at a time like this to be the father. She's 1 year old, am I correct?
She just turned one on the 30th, Lily.
What's the best what's the best part of fatherhood there with Lily?
I would say the best part is it gets better every time you see them. Because I mean, you don't see them a week. They're doing like 30, 40 different things that they weren't seeing you from the last time you seen them. And then seeing them experience something for the very first time and having that kind of bond with a little person that you made. I mean, you know, I had a great family background, a really close-knit family.
Yeah.
I had great parents. And to you really appreciate what your parents do or did when you were younger, when you have a child and you realize that, you know, it was all stuff to try to help you, for life and to grow. And now I get to experience that with my little girl. And it's one of those things where, you know, it touches you every time you get to hold her and squeeze her and she's over here grabbing your nose and saying dot, 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 you know, it's just those types of the things are the awesome things.
You know what I found about having a baby, which I never would have imagined? The amount of love that it brings to other people, the amount of happiness it creates for other people, how much it brings everybody together, that baby, right? Am I correct in that thinking?
That is 100% correct. I mean, everyone's got something going on in their life, and when you have a little girl, I mean, it brings things together, and it really just, like you said, you feel a love that you've never experienced before when you have a child.
Is there anything tough about being a dad for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's tough when you don't get to see her as much because, I mean, we do have a schedule. It's tough when, you know, she's not wanting to go to bed and you got to, you know, put her to bed and you get some sleepless nights. You know, there's tough things, but it's not that tough because it's your child. Yeah. You know, when it's like your brother's kid or like your friend's kid, you're like, oh, thank God they go home. But when it's
exactly.
your little kid, it's like when she's crying, I think it's cute. You know, I mean, it doesn't annoy me. It's like, oh, my God, this little booger.
Does Lily understand, Julian, that there are no days off? Does she understand that?
I don't think so yet. I think she's just happy with the itsy-bitsy spider.
Does she impact you in any way in terms of how much longer you would like to play? Does that enter into your thinking at all?
That hasn't necessarily hit my thinking, but what has hit my thinking is you know, going out and really embracing opportunities like playing on the football field and all those hard days that you have, the days where, you know, you may not be feeling right, mm-hmm. You may be having a down day, you know, you think of your little girl and you say, well, now you have something to do it for. You know, before you have a kid, you're kind of a little selfish in why you're doing certain things, especially with work. Now you have someone that you're living for. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where now you got a little this little girl is the next you. You know, and you're going to do everything in your control to give her the most possible opportunities, the most love.
Yeah.
Because that's what my parents did for me. And, you know, that's all I really know. So I don't know if it's necessarily made me think about how long I want to play, because I want to play until the wheels fall off.
Yeah.
I love this game. I've gotten everything in life because of this game. You know, I've been put on this earth to play this game. There's nothing more I love than competing and you know, the team environment, the locker room, the miserable days where you're getting yelled at, but then you go out on Sundays and you get a win. You know, a group of men that have a common goal from different backgrounds, different areas, different colors, different everything. Hmm. But everything comes together when you go out and win football games and you all believe in each other. You know, it's there's something about this game that I just absolutely love, so I can't put a time on it.
Let me ask you this. You talk about something about this game that you love, that I love, that many people love, but this game that we both love also is in something of an embattled time right now where a lot of people wondering about whether they'd let their kids play. We see these hits that go on like on Monday Night Football this week between Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, the Shazier hit, the Georgia Loca hit, Gronk on Sunday. A lot of things going on in football that, to me, are tarnishing the way that people view the game. What are your thoughts on what people are saying about the game that you and I both love today? How do you defend it?
Well, how do I defend it? Well, I mean, first off, if I played football since I was 8 years old, and the first thing I was always taught is keep your head up,
yep.
And you got to be taught right. You have to have the right fundamentals. That's a crucial part of playing this game. That's why it's a huge thing to have, you know, qualified coaches for our youth. You know, because the game brings so many great things to our youth. You know, it shows these kids how to set goals, teamwork, discipline, all these things. But I mean, there is a little danger factor. But there's a danger factor in any sport. Soccer, you go to soccer, kids can't even head the ball anymore because they're getting too many concussions. I mean, the concussion protocol in soccer, I think, is it's right up there per capita with ours. I'm not a fact check guy. Adam, you could probably get that stat, but it's up there.
Yep.
You know, baseball, you got guys getting, you know, hit with a 97-mile fastball. You know, anytime you watch something professional, these are grown men, so you know, it's not going to be the same thing as the youth, as the kids. And I understand people say, oh, well, you guys are going to affect this, you know, the young on how they do it if they see it. Well, that's when you have to have a good coach come in and teach these kids that, you know, that's not how you do it. I mean, when you're going full speed, stuff's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And that happens in any sport. Go look at skateboarding. Go look at dirt biking, surfing. I mean, it's just, you know, our game's a gladiator sport. Oh, yeah. And, you know, that's just how it goes.
When you see a guy like Ryan Shazier go down the way he did Monday night, and I don't know whether you're watching or not, but what goes through your mind at a time like that? Because we've all seen plays. I've been out on practice fields when players have gone down and stayed down and ambulances come to take the player away. What goes through your mind when you see something like that, Julian?
You know what? I just instantly start, you know, praying for the guy, sending vibes not only to him but for his family, his friends, because they're all in it with him. There's so many people. That's what a lot of people don't understand is the loved ones of the player. What they go through seeing their kids get hit and play and stuff like that at a professional level. And, I mean, of course, it's a scary thing, man. And I went out there, you know, and I instantly said, hey, man, I'm sending vibes to this guy because you don't want to see that for anyone. I mean, the NFL is a fraternity. Mm-hmm. You know, you compete against guys. You may hate some guys. Guys may hate you. But you never want to see someone get hurt. You never want to see someone get hurt because, you know, we all are brothers. We're all in this together. And you know, my heart goes out to him. And I heard he's doing better. There's potentially that he's doing better. And, you know, I'm just going to keep on sending prayers his way and to his family and his friends. And, you know, that's what I think about when I see those types of hits.
Let's get back to what you were doing on your daily rehab routine a little bit, because you're in that building every day, as you mentioned, from 7 to 3 a.m. What is that like to be around the guys while they're getting ready for a game and you're trying to get ready for next season?
It helps you because you're around the fellas.
Yeah.
You know, and then you also, you know, you get a little bummed out here and there because, you know, on Saturday when, you know, they're going to leave to go on a road trip, you're going home.
Yep, and you don't go on any trips.
You know, it's not the best for my knee and to be flying and stuff. But or when on Sundays when they're going to play games, you're watching. Yeah. And you know that's part of this sport. I know what I signed up for. You know that it's 100% injury rate at this level. And you know it sucks, but there's no sniveling. My dad always told me that when I was a kid.
Yep.
So you just need to worry about what you can control, and that's going out and trying to work on my knee, get my body back, and put all my time and energy into that.
What's it like to watch a game on Sunday when you are watching the guys that you love, your brothers out there, and they're going through something that you can't be a part of with them? What's that experience like?
You know, I like to watch the games at home. You know, I got one of my close buddies. Couple close buddies, I allow them to be at the house, but I'm going through the game just like as if I was playing.
Huh.
You know, I'm watching what the defense is doing. I'm seeing what I'd be doing on this, or you know, and then you know, you're sitting there, you're cheering for your fellas, you're cheering for, you know, Hoagie, Cooks, Dola, you know, Phil, he's coming in and he's been making some decent plays out there, you know, helping the team. Our defense is coming. You know, you become a fan and a cheerleader, unfortunately. So that's kind of what I do.
So as a fan of this team, what's your assessment of what their chances are this season and how far they can go?
You know, that's a little above my pay grade. You know, I'm not a fantasy football player. I'm not a GM or a head coach, but I can tell you one thing, you know, our coaching staff and our players, what they are going to do is that they're going to continue to try to improve week in and week out to go out there and win ball games. And,
there we go. We're going into Patriot mode there now, Julian. I love that. That's Patriot mode right there.
Hey, they're trying to get a day better than yesterday. That's all I know.
I'll ask you. I probably know the answer in advance, but I'm going to do my job and ask anyway. Does this team at all compare to either of the two championship teams that you were part of?
You know, honestly, I can't even answer that because I haven't been in the trenches with them.
Yep.
And every team is different. I mean, the two teams that I won with, what I was a part of, those teams were completely different with themselves. So you never really know unless you're a guy, you know, on that 53, 46 on game day that's out there playing and seeing in the eyes of fellas in the huddle and seeing how things go. I mean, I can't answer that question. I'm not part of it.
Yeah. Well, so I want to go back to those championship teams. I'm going to ask you this. Do you think you're ever going to get tired of being asked about your catch in the Super Bowl last year?
Shotgun snaps to Brady. Stands in. Throws down the Olford head of the ball. Tipped. And Julian diving for it. As Olford got in front of the receiver, Edelman has it. Did he make the catch?
He did. You got to be kidding.
At the 40.
Will the day ever come that you just don't want to talk about it anymore?
Yeah, I mean, it's you get pretty tired of it.
Already, huh?
Because I don't even think about that play. I think about the third down on right out of the three and out our defense gave us in the after halftime, you know, and on third down I dropped the ball, and I think about that play more than I think about the catch, to tell you the truth. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, it's a great thing to be a part of. I'm not saying anything like I'm not grateful for it or anything. It's just, you know, unfortunately in this business, this work, this line of work, you really can't think of the past because you're not graded on the past. You're graded on what you do now. And right now I'm not doing anything. So I got to think of when I am out there, I got to start visualizing about that. So yeah, that's kind of where my mind goes with all that.
You know what? That's good, Julian. I'm going to tell my daughter that she didn't miss anything by not getting to ask you about the catch because you would have talked about the third down play at the start of the second half anyway.
Hey, man. Well, you know, with the kids, you give them a good answer. You give them a good answer.
Yeah, I understand that. Tell me about this book. What made you want to write the book, Relentless? Did your daughter enter into that thinking at all?
She's a part of it, but I think what really made me want to do this, when I was approached with the opportunity was you know, when I was a kid, I always loved hearing the stories of how Walter Payton ran the hill.
Yeah.
Jerry Rice caught the bricks, ran the hill, had the work ethic. The stories behind the stories, the hardships, the adversity. I always loved hearing those stories. And, you know, with my career, there's been a lot of times I've had to hear the word no. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of times I've had to, you know, overcome something, an injury, you know, maybe getting dropped in the depth chart. Working your way to where you had to get, and I feel that they're applicable to anyone that and anything. I mean, in life, you know, our game's a microcosm of it. I like to think of, you know, what you put in, you get out. You know, ignoring naysayers, worrying about what you can control, working on fundamentals. If you apply those to any kind of work, I mean, it could help someone. And if my story can go out and motivate someone or help someone, you know, I think that's a pretty cool thing. You know, that's kind of why I wanted to write this book.
Is that the biggest piece of advice that you would tell to all these young people that hang on your words and read that book, that you can do anything, don't let people keep you down, Don't let them deny you the opportunity. Is that the message that you would give, or is there something else that you feel is even more important?
Well, that's part of it. You know, part of my message is finding your passion and hope. You know, I've just so happened to my talent is my passion. I'm very lucky person and fortunate person, but you got to find that talent and you got to be passionate about it. And you got to do everything in your mind, you know, and use the people in your life, surround yourself with great people, you know, use mentors, use coaches.
Yes.
To get to where you want to get.
Yep.
You know, don't have the foolish pride of, you know, thinking that, I don't want to be like this, that, or that. You know, being able to swallow your pride and just consistently do what you have to do, work hard, go, you know, it's because my dad would always say one thing to me. He said, did you outwork the five guys? And I go, Pops, what are you talking about? And I was working out by myself. And he goes, the five guys that are trying to take your job.
Wow.
You know, and it's one of those types of things where nothing's easy in this world. Everything's going to have some kind of problem. It's not worrying about the adversity and when it happens. It's being prepared for when it does happen and working your way out of it.
I like that. The five guys, you know, I did a podcast recently with the former Chiefs general manager, John Dorsey, and he talked about five guys too, but he talked about five guys in a different sense, Julian. He talked about five guys. He said everybody will have five people in their life, not their immediate family, that leaves a huge mark on their lives, that impact them, that help direct their lives. Off the top of your head, I know it's a big question. Who are the five people outside your dad that you talked about that have made that kind of mark on you?
Five. Well, geez. I would have to say my father. He's one of them. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to give him. You know, he's a guy that, you know, he's a self-made man. Grew up trailer parks.
Wow.
Worked his way to owning a small business that's been in business now for 36 years. In California, a hard state to hold a small business. A man like that, he's definitely taught me a lot of life lessons. Not necessarily even teach me, but just showing me through his hard work. You know, there's been a guy named by the name of John Arriaga. He's a Bay Area guy. He's a big old real estate guy out in California. And I remember when I got a C on my report card when I was, I think, maybe 12 or 13. He's a real powerful man out there.
Yep.
And my dad, he's kind of friends with my dad, and my dad brought me in to see him. And he starts counting.
What?
He goes, do you make your bed? And I looked at my dad, and my dad says, tell him the truth. And every morning. And I go, no. I go, my mom does sometimes. And then he starts counting 1, 2, 3. And he went to like 14 or something. He goes, a minute's not that long. It's the little things in life, the details in life, starting the morning with achieving something in life that will help you. And I was like 12 years old. Wow. So like from that day on, I made my bed, you know.
And you still do.
Yeah, so he's a big part of that, and being able to talk to him.
Wow.
You know, Coach Martin from Kent State, he's been a huge – he gave me my opportunity to play Division I quarterback. You know, he's been a huge guy in my life, you know, stuck with me through a lot, developed me a lot. You know, taught me the game of football. You know, my junior college coaches, those guys are awesome. Coach Owens, Tulloch, and Pollock, they've had a huge impact. Tom Brady has had a huge impact on me. Like I said, surrounding yourself with good people and people you can learn from. You know, in the book, you can hear, you know, how Tom and I developed a relationship by me moving out to L.A. To just in case he needed someone to throw to, you know, and kind of learning his ways and how he takes care of his body and how he is as a father and how he is as a professional and how he is as a businessman and how he is as a just a regular guy, how he treats people. You know, he's been a huge impact on my life. I mean, there's been a lot of people in my life that have helped me get to where I'm at. And, you know, I mean, there's countless more, but those are off the top of my head.
You know what? It's funny. You bring up Tom there and the influence and all the impacts that he's had on you with the way he acts. And I remember being at one of his best buddy events for a weekend, and he was up there
I saw you there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And he was up there doing what he was doing. And I just watched him all weekend, and, you know, a bunch of us had lunch inside. We missed you at that lunch. It was Tom and Teddy and some other people at the Shriver household. And I remember saying to Jay Feely at the time, I said, you know him from college. Is he really this genuine, this nice? And he said he is. He's incredibly.
He really.
And let me say, the night that we missed you in Detroit, the way he was with my daughter was unbelievable. Like I said to him after a while, like, hey, Tom, hey, we've taken too much of your time already. I felt bad. Go back to the bus. You know, please, thank you. I mean, so genuine. That's the word I think, genuine, genuine. As genuine
it
as
is.
Any player I've met.
You know, he's just a, you know, he's meaner than a two-headed rattlesnake. Don't get me wrong when he's competing. But when it comes to, like just a sincere person, like, he knows everyone's name and you know, he just makes everyone feel good. Like he's a really good dude.
And when you're around that, it rubs off on you. You see little things. That's very important. So when you're talking about all those things.
I wish you rubbed off on me a little more, Adam. I wish you rubbed off on me a little more.
Well, I think he's done a pretty good job of rubbing off on you enough, Julian. You got enough Julian and enough of Tom to make the persona that you are, and I think that's pretty good. Hey, you talked about your passion being football before. When you're done playing, do you have any idea what you will wind up doing with the rest of your life, what you'd like to wind up doing with the rest of your life, aside from taking care of Lily Rose?
Lily Rosemary.
Lily Rosemary, excuse me.
No worries. You know what? I mean, there's opportunities that are there that I've, you know, I'm exploring here and there, but, you know, I talk about it in my book, and everyone always asks, you know, when you were in high school, did you think you were going to the NFL? Or when you were in junior college, did you think you were going to D1? Or when you were in, you know, at Kent State, did you think you were going to make it to the league? And honestly, I was always so caught up into what I had on my plate at that time. I mean, of course, maybe there's a thought here or there, but I've literally done that my whole life, and it's got me to where I'm at. I don't want, you know, I don't want to give up on an opportunity that I have already. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you work hard and, you know, you do the right things, you know, something will come up. So I'm just worried about football. I love this game, and I want to play this game as long as I can.
Hey, Julian, I really appreciate taking some time today. Thank you very, very much for all of this. I wish you the best on your continued recovery. And hopefully we'll get you in the preseason next year. Dylan would be very excited to catch up with you at that point in time.
Definitely. I appreciate that, bud, and I'll see you next year.
Happy holidays to you and your family, Julian.
Happy holidays, buddy. I'll see you.
The call you heard earlier in the podcast comes courtesy of Bob Soucy from 98.5 in Boston.
Cap hit.
All right, thanks very much to Patriots wide receiver Julian Edelman. We're now going to be joined by the ESPN NFL stats maven, Evan Kaplan, who's appeared on this podcast before, and we are happy to have him back again. And Evan, we just heard Julian Edelman there talk about the Patriots, what he's been doing during his rehab. Give me some numbers to put into perspective what his absence has and could mean to this New England football team.
Thanks for having me on again, Adam. And last year and over his entire career, Julian Edelman has kind of been the safety blanket for Tom Brady. Last season, Tom Brady targeted Edelman 38 times on third down, 20 times more than any other Patriots receiver. This year he's kind of spreading it around to make up for the loss of Edelman 20 to 25 times for three different players, James White, Rob Gronkowski, and Danny Amendola.
And have they replaced him sufficiently?
They have. And Tom Brady's numbers, still great overall, great on third down, leading the NFL in passing yards entering week 14.
All right, Evan, it's only Wednesday, but the story of the week has been the Giants house cleaning this week. Put into perspective exactly what has gone wrong with this New York football team.
It really boils down to their offense. Ben McAdoo, an offensive coach, he was their offensive coordinator in 2014 and 2015. Remember, they had Odell Beckham Jr. for most of those years. They scored at least 30 points 12 times in those two seasons. I was in the top five in the NFL. Last two seasons, since he's become the head coach, zero times. They have not scored 30 points in a single game over the last two seasons. That's 29 games, including the one playoff game.
How does that happen?
It's really hard to explain. Obviously, the loss of Beckham this year.
But that's not
it. Some of it, but it's not it. You're right. It's because all of last year they had him. The offense was clicking. They had one of the best defenses in the NFL, so the offense had plenty of chances, and it just didn't seem to work out. They were never able to put it together. What they had with him as the coordinator, they were never able to translate that with him as the head coach.
And I think that's ultimately why Ben McAdoo and Jerry Reese, the former general manager, had their card keys revoked.
Absolutely. And to put that in perspective even more, the Rams and the Eagles, both of those teams have scored at least 30 points in seven games this season alone. So this season alone, they've scored seven games with at least 30 points. Giants didn't do it at all in the last two seasons.
How about that? The Rams and the Eagles, first picks in the 2016 draft, one Goff, two Wentz. I remember the time leading up to that draft, there were some anxious moments in the Philadelphia organization about who the Rams would take, and there was some curiosity about who the Rams would take. But the Rams were always going Goff, and the Eagles wanted Wentz and would have taken Wentz at one anyway, so each team got the quarterback that it wanted. What do we have to say about this particular meeting, Evan?
They did. First career matchup between these two, and it was the seventh time in the common draft era that we saw quarterbacks picked with the first and second overall pick. And as you said, on both teams moving up to get these guys was really fascinating. April 14th, 2016, we saw the Rams trade up with the Titans to get the number one pick. Just 6 days later, the Eagles move up to get the number two pick. They organize a trade with the Browns. And now we've got the first meeting between these two quarterbacks. The first time that quarterbacks picked one and two in the same draft will meet since the 2015 season opener, when Marcus Mariota and the Titans got past Jameis Winston and the Buccaneers.
All right, Evan, in the AFC West, we've got three teams, the Chiefs, the Chargers, and the Raiders at 6-6 with 4 weeks left in the season. So 3 6-6 teams, one quarter of the season to go. What stands out to you about the AFC West race?
Fascinating division, and this week we have the Raiders traveling to Kansas City to play the Chiefs, but the team that's been playing the best is the Chargers, unquestionably. 6-2 in their last eight games. They've won three in a row during that three-game winning streak, outscoring their opponents 101-40. And as fantasy playoffs get started this weekend in most leagues, if you have one of these Chargers, you're in good shape. Keenan Allen, over 100 fantasy points in his last three games.
He's been incredible.
And the Chargers defense leads the NFL in fantasy points.
I would not have thought.
Since week 11. Since week 11, eight interceptions for that Chargers defense.
Wow.
Three defensive touchdowns. Remember a lot of those against Nathan Peterman and that Bills team a few weeks ago.
Wow. Impressive. Chargers defense. All right, Evan Kaplan, the NFL ESPN stats maven, thank you for another splendid appearance on the Know Them from Adam podcast.
Thanks a lot, Adam.